The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
On today's show, the United States is not doing all that well in the Tokyo Olympics. So what's the reason for this Olympic fail? Also, Nancy Pelosi's Truth Commission, that's actually a commission of lies. Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick joins me to talk about the border and also about the runaway Texas Democrats. Debbie and I are going to talk also about the latest BLM shakedown. And finally, I'm going to talk about Shakespeare's Richard II and how he bears an uncanny similarity to the Republican Party. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
America needs this voice. But times are crazy, in a time of confusion, division, and lies. We need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
For decades, the United States has absolutely dominated the Olympics swept the medal counts, defeated other huge countries. And what made these victories especially important is the other countries would feature, in a sense, professional athletes. Think about the Soviet Union, where it was a job, a career, to be an athlete. Same with countries like China. The United States, on the other hand, cultivated athletes in the private sector. It was a triumph of the kind of free market system, but also of American grit and determination and the pursuit of excellence. You can see this even as late as the last Olympics, the 2016 Olympics, the Summer Games. Let's look at the final medal count. United States, 46 gold medals. Next up, second, Great Britain, 27 gold medals, markedly fewer. And China's third with 26 medals. If you look at the overall count, United States, 121 medals. Next up, Great Britain, 67 medals. So you see this dominance of the United States. Now, this dominance is nowhere evident at the Tokyo Olympics, at least not so far. I just pulled up the medal count as of today, and here it is. The leader, China, 11 gold medals. Second, Japan, also 11. And the United States is in a kind of third place with 10. Overall medals, the United States has the most, 30. But China has 24, Japan has 20. Now notice, by the way, Japan is a much smaller country than America, and there's a whole bunch of sports in which the Chinese have never excelled, such as track and field. So interestingly, and this may change as the Olympics goes on, but it's quite clear the United States is not going to have the dominant position that it has had in previous Olympics. Now, why is this? I want to argue that the reason for it, and the reason that we see time after time people who are kind of expected to win, overpraised, made into almost cult figures, and then they crash and burn. The most blatant example is Simone Biles. She was made into sort of this great hope of America, and boom, she withdraws and gives Russia the gold medal. She's also withdrawing from the all-round competition. It's just horrible. And now they're trying to turn, defeat into victory by saying, oh, we really admire her courage, and she was amazing, and she was true to herself. All right. So that's an important phrase, being true to yourself. It's almost as if the Olympics has now become, at least for the progressives in the media, about something other than winning. Remember that for the ancient Greeks, the Olympics was a matter of life and death. It was not a matter of being finding out who you are, being true to your feelings. And we see the way in which not just this broad therapeutic culture, let's call it. And by therapeutic culture here, I mean a culture that emphasizes how you feel, specifically how you feel about yourself. But also woke politics. Woke politics has penetrated all our sports. We've seen it with the NFL, we've seen it with the NBA, and we've seen it with the Olympics. It's happening now. Here is a writer for ESPN, and this is part of what shapes the overall kind of psychology of the sport. This is a guy named William Roden. He's talking on CBS this morning, and he's saying when he saw the American flag at the Olympics, it was very disturbing to him. Why? Because it reminded him of January 6th. He goes, quote, "I love the opening ceremonies, March of Countries, and I realized, you know, man, particularly after these last 4 years, I had it wrong. Nationalism is not good. We've seen the rise of white nationalism." So here's every other country celebrating its nationalism, cheering its athletes. And here is this ESPN guy basically saying, nah, I don't like it. I don't like this American flag waving. And of course, we've heard about athletes who want to burn the flag if they get to the podium. Happily, I don't think those athletes will get to the podium. Megan Rapinoe taking a knee and then, you know, first game up against Sweden. Whoops. This highly heralded U.S. women's soccer team. Oh, they've been 41 wins in a row. Boom. 3-0. They lose. Humiliating defeat. Now, let me turn to Simone Biles because it's not, I have a certain measure of sympathy for her. She's a very young, these young gymnasts are they're not even fully mature. And it is a lot of pressure. And there's no question that even before the Olympics with media and social media, there is an absurd elevation of expectations. And so she, you may say, flamed out. Initially it was supposed to be an injury. It turns out it's not really an injury. It's, quote, mental health, which is to say that she was having trouble, you may say, coping with the psychology of competition at that level. Now, the problem with this, of course, is that, look, there are people who have mental health problems. We can't confuse mental health in general with the specific flaming out psychologically because you can't take the competition. That's a whole different matter. In other words, what I'm saying is that to be an athlete requires not just physical, but psychological toughness. This is understood in every sport. Imagine if, you know, world heavyweight champion opted out of the boxing competition because, you know, I was having some mental health issues. I mean, it just kind of my mind failed me at the last minute. I think I need to really improve my mental health. Well, yeah, okay, but maybe you shouldn't be competing at that level. And let's remember, Simone Biles took the place of someone else. She let down her team. What I find particularly repulsive is this idea that somehow, it's one thing for the media to say, you know, let's maintain a dignified silence. This is all really embarrassing. We kind of created this cult figure and now that narrative is in tatters. Let's just privately regret we did that. But no, you know, here's an article in The New Yorker, The Radical Courage of Simone Biles. Here's an article in New York Magazine. Simone Biles just demonstrated a true champion mindset. And this whole preposterous conversion of sort of failure into success, defeat into victory, almost celebrating defeat. I mean, I'm almost worried that this is what's going to happen in the United States, that what the left will do is they will drag this country down. But even as it goes down, they'll be chanting jubilantly, "Woohoo! Look at us! We're amazing! This is our final victory! This is our greatest triumph! Throwing ourselves into the abyss, going into obscurity! Man, we couldn't! This is our greatest moment! Wow!" Think of the famous lines from Patton's opening speech, where he talks about the qualities of America, and he talks about the fact that Americans hate to lose. And he says, if I see someone who loses and laughs, he goes, I can feel only contempt, I'm paraphrasing, for that kind of a person. And that's my sentiment right now. I look at the left, I look at our therapeutic culture, I look at all this woke nonsense, but I look at other countries which demand more of their athletes. They demand more, they train for more, they aim at not just physical, but psychological toughness, and that ultimately pays off on the medal stand. Mike Lindell is in the middle of his towel special, and we just can't stop ordering them. We got some yesterday, and we've ordered more. By the way, we've replaced all our towels with MyPillow towels. And now Mike Lindell has a special that we can't pass up, so we're going crazy. You can't have too many towels. Towels, the ordinary towels, don't dry you that well. They feel soft and lotiony in the store, but you take them home and they don't absorb. Why not? Because towel companies typically import the product and then add softeners that make the towels feel good, but they don't dry you very well. Mike Lindell has solved this problem. He created the best towel company right here in the USA. MyPillow has proprietary technology to create towels that not only feel soft, but actually absorb and leave you feeling fresh and dry. MyPillow towels come with the MyPillow 60-day money-back guarantee. For a limited time, Mike Lindell is offering a ridiculously good deal on his 6-piece towel set. Now, this includes 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, and 2 washcloths. All made with USA cotton, soft and yet absorbent. Regular price, $109.99. Mike is offering them for $39.99. A great deal. Call 800-876-0227. That number again, 800-876-0227. Or go to MyPillow.com to get the discount. You got to use promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh. Man, yesterday's Pelosi Commission hearing was just, I mean, to me, it was a laugh fest, one on top of the other. Now, I recognize that this laughter seems kind of inappropriate in the air of solemnity that surrounded the event. You know, one Capitol police officer testifying after another. But, I mean, am I the only one who saw this as a pathetic cry fest? I mean, literally grown men crying, and not crying over something that immediately happened to them. Oh, I lost my wife in an accident. No. This is crying over the events of January 6th. Unbelievable. Schiff pretends to cry. Kinzinger pretends to cry. The cop pretends to cry. I mean, one after the other. And you know that they're all faking it because 5 minutes later, they're chuckling, laughing, high-fiving each other. So this is all massive theater. This is all massive theater. My favorite, of course, is the is this guy, Sergeant Aquilino Gonell. He starts off with the crying and then he basically goes, I thought I was going to die. I thought I was going to die laughing, but here we go. Just take a little glimpse of this.
I could feel myself losing oxygen and recall thinking to myself, this is how I'm going to die.
Yeah, this guy's trying to die because he's apparently blocking an exit. This is a guy from the Dominican Republic. It's kind of funny to listen to him because he has these massively eloquent statements, but he can barely read them, making it really obvious that somebody else wrote this stuff. I mean, long, circuitous sentences. You just have to watch this. You can catch it on social media and you're going to realize, you know what? This is all scripted. This is all fake. This is not a commission of truth. This is a commission of lies. And one lie on top of the other, you know, first of all, the invocation of the good old Sicknick lie. This was a Capitol Hill police officer, Harry Dunn. He goes, yeah, the Sicknick died of injuries sustained from the riot. Completely false. Medical examiner report, Sicknick died of natural causes. The absolute worst was Officer Dunn. And this guy was obviously, you know, lying through his teeth. First of all, he goes, one woman in a pink MAGA shirt yells out the N-word. Then he goes, a whole crowd of 20 people jointly start shouting effin' N-word. Can you believe this? So this is what the guy says happened. 20 people simultaneously were shouting at him. And apparently, he also claims that some of them called his mother a whore. Here's my question. All of the Capitol is under surveillance. Where's the surveillance video? Police officers have body cam. Where's the body cam video? It's a very simple principle. If it's not on the video, it didn't happen. And the simple truth of it is, it's not on the video. It didn't happen. So this is not a truth fest. It's essentially a lie fest. These are people putting on a show. They're leaving aside. I mean, I don't think Ashley Babbitt's name was even mentioned in the hearing. This is, you may say, theater for stupid people. And I guess people who have been just watching, you know, CNN and MSNBC, they've never heard the other side. And so all they're getting is this diet of propaganda with a kind of adoring, genuflecting media going, oh yeah, he's crying. Let me wipe a tear from my eye. And so this is all, as I say, it's the argumentum ad ignorantium, the argument that appeals to the ignorance of the audience. But for those of us who are kind of in the know, who followed the whole thing, who watched it live, who've actually read whatever we can about it, who have looked at the video that we have or that's been released about it, our reaction is not to take in these lies, but to guffaw, to ridicule, and to respond to all this weepery with a massive belly chortle. There's no doubt in my mind that Americans' trust in the media is at an all-time low. I mean, when you turn on so-called respected news channels, all you get is state propaganda, shameless virtue signaling, and a blatant disregard of the truth. It's an insult to the intelligence of the American people, which is why my good friends at The Daily Wire are providing an alternative. From The Daily Wire newsroom comes Morning Wire, a morning news podcast that gives you the facts you need to know first. Brought to you by Daily Wire editor-in-chief John Bickley and co-host Georgia Howe, Morning Wire will wake you up with the latest developments in politics, sports, culture, and education, all with a heavy emphasis on the truth. Episodes drop every weekday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. So go subscribe now to hear the trailer. And if you like what you hear, leave a 5-star review if you want to help Daily Wire provide a source Americans can wake up and trust. Each episode will be short with only enough room to fit the facts so you can be sure your breakfast isn't being served with a side of someone else's agenda. Subscribe to Morning Wire as soon as you can. I want to talk about the phenomenon of the Twitter general. What am I talking about? Military generals who seem to spend their time at the Pentagon, not engaging in war games, strategic planning, an attempt to understand what China is up to. No, what they're doing is they're sort of lashing out at patriots on social media. This is what they do at work. Now, as conservatives, you know, we have been really for going back to the Reagan years and before, pretty uncritical supporters of the military. And in some ways, even gullible supporters of the military. And by that, I mean, there are generals who joke among themselves, you know, all we have to do is go before the Congress and use the word Soviet Union, and they give us everything we want. So they were playing us, appealing to our patriotic sentiments to rake in institutional cash, huge amounts for the military. And what's happened over the years, and this can happen to any government institution, in fact, it happens to most. Maybe it happened to the military a little slower than others, but it's happened quite clearly now, is you've got all these generals, and their interest is really not in warfare, particularly. Or it is in social media warfare. And their real opponents are domestic, and they're playing the woke game. Why? Because, not because they're particularly woke themselves, I don't think, but because they see it as a mode of advancement in Biden's America. I've talked about General Milley, but I want to talk here about Major General Patrick Donahoe. This is the commanding general of Fort Benning, Georgia. Two-star general. And again, to look at him, you think, yeah, he looks like a pretty tough guy. He looks like a guy that we can sort of entrust our national security with. And then you see he's basically getting into a massive Twitter war with a kid or some, you know, 20-something at Hillsdale College. This is a Hillsdale kid who was in the military, former Marine officer, but is now at the Van Andel School of Statesmanship. This guy, Major General Donahoe, tweets out that he really is likes the idea of imposing a vaccine mandate throughout the military. He wishes he had the authority to do it. He'd do it himself. And so this former Marine, Hosiah Lippincott, basically calls him on it and says, wait a minute, you know, challenges him on it. And the interesting thing is the general's reaction, which is irritable, lashing out. First of all, he says to Hillsdale, come get your boy, using that derogatory, come get your boy, as if our private sector, social media, is like the military. You know, in the military, just give an order, go get that guy, throw him in irons, lock him up in his room, in his barracks, make him do 100 push-ups. This is his attitude, but his attitude toward a private citizen who's no longer in the military. And then when the kid basically pushes back, which he probably didn't expect, and other people start pushing back, he accuses them of being, quote, shills for Putin. What? Suddenly, American citizens who dispute his position on COVID become Russian agents. So what you have here is, think about it. We spend $700 billion a year on these guys. We fund this massive military machine. And then we begin to wonder as we sit back, wait a minute, how is it that this, the best military in the world with the best technology, keeps getting its butt whipped? How come we can't beat, you know, North Vietnamese peasants and Afghan tribesmen and Iraqi militants who are in their 20s and early 30s? So these people are producing a horrendous performance. And by the way, it's not a failure of the ordinary soldier. It's a failure of leadership. Why? Because these guys, at the end of the day, are bureaucrats. They don't really command anything in the military sense. What do? They write memos. They've got staff all around them. They have logistics operations. They deal with briefs. They appear before Congress and, you know, do the smooth talking routine. They have public affairs officials that deal with the media and leak to the media. So we have to face the grim truth that guys like Donahoe and perhaps even Milley, they're fake generals. They have all these badges and they've got tons of medals. But medals for what? Have you actually won a war that you can point to? Well, I guess the Gulf War, 1992, we whipped Saddam Hussein. We didn't even push him out of power. We just pushed him back out of Kuwait. Okay, wow, thank you. Great work. But what I find appalling is the way in which these guys now seem to think that their real enemies are not in China, are not in Putin's Russia, but they are fellow American citizens. On July 4, 1776, we declared our independence from taxation from a government an ocean away. Today, our government is the one imposing oppressive taxes, while at the same time sending our wealth overseas and driving the value of the dollar into the ground through reckless spending. This is the time to declare your independence for your savings. Cut your ties to the U.S. dollar and invest in gold and silver with Birch Gold Group. If you haven't reached out to Birch Gold to diversify part of your IRA or 401k into a precious metals IRA, hey, do it today. Text Dinesh to 484848 and get a free information kit on protecting your savings with gold. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, and over 10,000 happy customers. Talk to them. Have them help you safeguard your investments. Text Dinesh to 484848 to claim your free information kit and to speak with a precious metals expert on holding gold and silver in a tax-sheltered account. Again, that number, text Dinesh to 484848. I am really happy to welcome to the podcast Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. Dan, it's great to have you. Great. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. We've known each other a little bit, but you've known Debbie, my wife, even longer. So thanks for joining me.
Sure. And around here, they call it Lieutenant Dan or Dan. And we've known each other so long, it's just Dan, Dinesh. But thank you.
Okay, will do. Let me start by talking about the runaway Texas Democrats. I believe the Texas legislative session just ended. And I know Governor Abbott has been saying, hey, listen, we're not going to let these guys shut us down. We're going to keep these sessions going. So let me ask you about that. What is the next step? As I understand, the Texas Democrats aren't coming back anytime soon. One guy, I believe, did return. So kind of update me about what's happening right now and what happens next.
Sure. So our regular session, which is 140 days long every other year, we have a lot to do for the ninth largest economy in the world. A lot to do in a short period of time, but we normally get our work done. But at the end of session, there were a number of bills, including our election security bill, that the Democrats killed over in the House, and a number of other important bills for conservatives. So the governor then called us back in a special session beginning in July. A special session is 30 days. It can be less. It cannot be more. And on the second or third day, the Democrats got on a plane and flew to Washington, and they broke the quorum in the Texas House. And what that means is you can't take up any legislation. I was able to hold the quorum. I kept enough Democrats left in the Senate that we passed every bill. There were 10 or 11 the governor put on the call. We passed every bill, but there's no one to receive them in the House. But we did our work and we passed our legislation. So now this session runs out the end of next week, and then another session will be called right after that, and the Democrats will either come back or not. Right now, we hear they may be coming back, but we're not sure. And the governor said, we'll call special after special after special. We have to pass this important legislation specifically on election security and on bail bond reform and other key bills.
Now, initially, this Texas kind of runaway move was sort of celebrated in the media as a kind of beautiful effort to evade this election integrity law. And they were campaigning, as I take it, in Washington for H.R. 1, the kind of nationalizing or federalizing of elections. So far, that seems to have really gone nowhere. And so those guys are just camping out in Washington, D.C. If you were them, would you just stay there, or do you think that they're going to feel the pressure to come back? And if they come back, will they in fact be kind of arrested and escorted to the legislative session? What's going to happen if they do come back?
Yeah. So Dinesh, what has happened is, and 65% of Republicans do not want the federal government to run our elections. That means Republicans, Democrats, and Independents. They don't want the Democrats. I mean, they don't want Congress running our elections. And so what these Democrats who have left, what they're really trying to do is usurp our own power, their own power in the state of Texas to set the elections. The Supreme Court's been very clear. The states run the elections. And so this H.R. 1, that's a terrible bill for America, and it would be terrible for Texas, that's what they're really fighting for. They're going up there saying, please pass this bill. And they've failed, as you said. And back in 2003, I didn't join the Senate until 2007, became lieutenant governor in 14. But back in 3, the Democrats took off 2002, 2003, that time period. And they went to Oklahoma and they went to New Mexico. And what happened, Dinesh, at the end of the day, after about 30 days or so, they get bored of looking at each other. They start even getting jealous, infighting. Well, how come you got to do this interview today? How come you were on television? I wasn't. And mama back home says, hey, you need to get back. You need to be back to work, or dad, you know, for the women who serve in the Democrat Party. Their spouses say, it's time for you to come back home. You're missing this. You're missing that. And their job's saying, hey, you can't stay away forever. You know, our legislature in Texas, many people around the country may not know this, makes $600 a month. We are a citizen legislature. So they all have a job. So at some point, they get pressure from their families and their job to come back. They can't stay there forever, Dinesh. They have to come back. And if they do come back and don't show up to the Capitol, they will be apprehended by our state police, and they will be brought back to the Capitol.
Dan, a bunch of the January 6th defendants are facing charges. And apart from the minor charge of like trespassing, being in a without authorization in a federal building, one of the kind of notable and standout charges is obstructing an official proceeding. And my question is, you know, morally speaking, what is the difference between a group of ragtag guys, quote, disrupting, evidently for a few hours, an official proceeding, and a minority legislative wing of a party essentially subverting a legislative proceeding in the state of Texas and taking off? I realize they didn't storm the Texas Capitol, but by leaving the state, they stop a legislative proceeding from going forward. So is it not a fact that these are subverters and not champions of democracy?
Yeah, well, Dinesh, you're right on target. In fact, what I've said many times in interviews, this is anarchy in the halls of the Capitol. They're no different than the anarchists in the street that are disruptive to how society operates. And in our state, our quorum is a very small level, actually. If we don't have 2/3, in other words, just one, there are 150 House members. So if 51 House members leave, they break quorum. In the Senate, I have 31 senators. If I have 21, I can continue to operate. But if I don't have 21, I can't operate. Most states in the country are just 50-50. So in most states, they couldn't walk out. The minority could not have tyranny over the majority. But in Texas, and this has been in our laws, in our Constitution forever, it's only, you know, 1/3 have to leave plus one. And so by their slim minority, we still have about 80-some to 90 members in the House, but we need 100. So 51 left for Washington, or they're hiding out somewhere in Texas that we can't find them. But this is anarchy. They're just stopping the ability for government to function. In fact, at the end of this month, if they don't come back, nearly 2,000 people who work at the Capitol won't get paid because the governor vetoed Article 10 of the budget that we passed in May that pays the staff, all the staffs and all the people that work in the Capitol. It doesn't impact the members, Dinesh. Again, they only make $600 a month. They don't care if they lose their paycheck, but it's important to all of the people here at the Capitol. So they don't even care if people lose their health insurance and their jobs that work for them. They are so singular focused on that this they have to stop, you know, photo ID at the booth. They don't want any security at all at the ballot box. Now, they've recently, as you know, turned around and said, well, we're really for photo voter ID, but they're not. They want to stop that. We've had it, Dinesh, since 2011 when I was in the Senate. I was one of the authors of that bill. It's worked fine. Dinesh, this is something most people don't know in Texas. They keep talking about how we want to suppress the votes, and we don't as Republicans. This is about securing the vote, mail-in ballots and in-person ballots. We have increased voting in Texas, Dinesh, more than any other state in the country in the last 10 years, over 40%. In our gubernatorial elections, over 76%. Our presidential elections, over 40%. 58% of Texans who were registered voted 10 years ago. Today, it's 68% nearly. So we have expanded the vote more than any other state in the country. They have no basis to stand on calling this a voter suppression bill. It's just a lie.
When we come back, I want to take up a little different topic with Dan Patrick, namely the border. Did you ever read the fine print that appears when you start browsing online in incognito or privacy mode? It says that your activity might still be visible to your employer, your school, your internet service provider. How can they even call it incognito? To really stop people from seeing the sites you visit, you need to do what I do and use ExpressVPN. Now think about all the times you've used Wi-Fi at a coffee shop, a hotel, or any other public place. Without ExpressVPN, every site you visit could be logged by the admin of that network, and that's still true even when you're in so-called incognito mode. What's more, your home internet provider, I'm talking Comcast, AT&T, whatever, can also see and record your browsing data. And in the U.S., they're legally allowed to sell that data to advertisers. ExpressVPN is an app that encrypts all of your network data and reroutes it through a network of secure servers so your private online activity stays just that, private. ExpressVPN works on all your devices. It's super easy to use. The app literally has one button. You tap it to connect, and your browsing activity is secure from prying eyes. Stop letting strangers invade your online privacy. Protect yourself at expressvpn.com/Dinesh. When you go to expressvpn.com/Dinesh, you'll get 3 extra months free. Again, that's expressvpn.com/Dinesh. I'm back with Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. Dan, part of your attention necessarily is on the southern border. And under Biden, the southern border has become something of an open border. The gates open and people seem to be, and I see these videos on social media, pouring in. And they're not just pouring in from Mexico, from Tijuana. They're pouring in from all over the world, via Mexico, it appears. So, number one, what do you think the Biden administration is up to here? What is the reason why they are so committed to this idea of a de facto open border? Let's start there. Why are they doing it?
So under President Trump, we had actually gotten the border under control with his protocols with Mexico, where people seeking asylum were held in Mexico until they could come here, and the border crossings were down and the apprehensions were down significantly. Biden came in and just erased everything. And it's the worst it's ever been, Dinesh. And America has to understand this, and the world has to understand this. We're being invaded. In the past 20 years, on average, we've apprehended on the Texas border about 435,000 people a year. I say on the border in general, the border from Brownsville, the Gulf of Mexico, to San Diego. But of the 1,900-mile border, about 1,200 is in Texas. So most come through here, 60 or 65%. So we've been apprehending the federal government about 435,000 a year, year after year. Now, you have to remember, that's just who we apprehend. Some police think we get 1 out of 3, 1 out of 4. So another 1 million, 1.5 million, 2 million have been coming in for the last several years. This year, Dinesh, we're on track to apprehend 2 million people compared to 435,000. That's an invasion. And many of these people are bringing in COVID. And that's why just this week, Biden has turned around and said, well, we may send some families back because finally they're awake about COVID, because he also has a problem now. He said he was going to solve that issue. Well, now we've had an outbreak in some areas, but people are pouring across the border. They're criminals. They are positive with COVID. For example, we have most people are coming from Central America. I think their vaccination rates in Honduras are 7%, 12% in Guatemala, very low. So these people are coming in with COVID on top of it. But the plan here, and here's the key question, Dinesh, do they have their back turned on this and don't know what's going on? No, they know exactly what's going on. This is a plan. They want millions. And again, if 2 million are apprehended, another 2, 3, 4 million get in for the next 3 or 4 years between now and the 2024 elections, that's 10 million people, 12 million, 14 million people that will come in, many over 18. They want to give them citizenship. They want to register them to vote. And they want to take over the country with these people who are now invading our country. That's their plan. They don't ever talk about it. But that's their plan.
So you're saying really they're seeking not perhaps a demographic replacement, but a demographic shift in America because they think that there's some demographic inevitability that these people will stay. And at some point, they're going to have to become citizens. And who are they going to be grateful for, if not to the party that let them in the door?
Yeah. Well, not only that, Dinesh, but if you look at the immigration into Florida, for example, most of those people were fleeing Cuba or fleeing some repressive government somewhere. They came into America for liberty and freedom. If you look at California, that once was a Republican state under Ronald Reagan and others in the past, the influx of millions of people who came to America not for liberty and freedom, but to get on the social health care plan, to get a more quality education they could get back. In other words, to get government stuff. And these are a lot of good people. Look, everybody wants to go somewhere and improve their family life, but we have to do it in a legal way, not in an illegal way. And what happened to California? Compare California to Florida. Florida is still Republican and conservative, and California has become one of the most liberal states in the country. They totally took over California. That's what they're trying to do to America because the people are coming now. And look, they're not all criminals. They all have COVID. But there are a lot of bad actors coming in. Okay, let's be very clear about that. A lot of gang members, a lot of serious felons that we're catching and apprehending. But most of the people that are coming over are trying to better their life. But they're coming here not for freedom and liberty in the American way. They're coming here just to make a better living and coming from more socialist government. And that's what they're used to. And that's what the Democrats are offering. Come to America. We want to turn it into a socialist nation, just like you left.
Kind of what you're saying is that the Democrats have almost successfully established a one-party state in California. There's a Republican opposition, but it's just a token opposition.
Right.
And that's kind of what they want to do to the country.
Right. And they did that over 20 years in California, 30 years. But this is their long-term plan. The left, you have to take over. If you want to take over a country, you have to take over the education system. And they're doing that in K-12 in many states, higher education. You have to take over the media. They've done that. It's not the mainstream media. It's the Marxist street media today. Except for Fox News, yourself, and a few other outlets, it is the Marxist stream media. And the third stool of taking over the country is just to take over the electorate. And that's what they're doing. And because when you get down to most of the people who are here in Texas in the past were coming from Mexico. Now it's less than 20% usually coming across from Mexico. But the people that have come here from Mexico, particularly hardworking people, they're a part of our culture. In the Valley, they're now changing from Democrat to Republican Party because they want to protect our border. They want to protect our economy. They work hard. They don't want big government. They don't want high taxes. And so when I go out and campaign as a Republican, if I go into a room of 100 Democrats, Hispanic Democrats who have always voted Democrat, Dinesh, and I say I'm for pro-life, which most Hispanics are, most Mexicans are, Mexican Americans, I'm pro-life, I'm pro-Second Amendment, I want great educational opportunities for you, charter schools, I want economic opportunities for you, low taxes, smaller government, and I want to secure that border from criminals, I'll get 15, 20 that will convert and vote for me. But if a Democrat walks into a room of 100 Republican Hispanics who have always voted Republican, and they say, I'm for abortion, I want to take your guns, I want open borders, I want to raise your taxes, I want to kill the oil and gas industry, which a lot in the Valley work in, they don't walk out with any votes. So when it comes to hardworking people who want to come to this country for freedom and liberty and be part of the American dream, Republicans do very well with those folks. But the people that are coming in now, I can't get in the head of everyone who's crossing the border illegally, but most of them are coming here because they want a better way of life. They're in poverty. They see this great social safety net in America, and that's what they're coming for. They're really not coming as other immigrants in the past did to become part of the American dream, in my view.
I found it so telling that Alex Mayorkas made the statement to the Cubans specifically, hey, do not come by the sea, because if you do, we're not letting you into America. So here you've got people who are literally fleeing political persecution and qualified directly under our refugee laws. And in the meantime, unlawfully, we're kind of opening the back door to people who don't meet those qualifications and in a sense are just overrunning the border with the evident tacit consent of the Biden administration.
Right. And the drug cartels are totally in charge of this, Dinesh. The drug cartels make a lot of money off of smuggling people to Texas and America. And they're coming across the border. The Rio Grande is not that wide in some spaces. You can walk across, especially when the river's low. But they're also coming by sea and air because people from Venezuela are flying into Mexico. People from China are flying into Mexico. People from Europe are flying into Mexico. So when they say, well, if you come by sea, well, they're coming here by plane. They're coming to Mexico or they're coming up from Central America, but they're coming from all over the world, as you said at the beginning. And so it has to be stopped because we are being invaded. Our country is changing. And if we don't get a hold of it sooner than later, we will lose our country. We will become a socialist nation because they will have the power at the ballot box by millions of people that they won't allow in the next 4 years. That's why Texas is building our own wall, putting up our own fence. That's why we're deploying National Guard and troopers to the border, doing everything we can. But we have to have a strong partner, which we had under Trump, in the White House. But we've spent, I've authorized as president of the Senate, lieutenant governor, and president of the Senate, and helped write the budget. We have authorized now over $4 billion. We'll be passing $5 billion since I've been lieutenant governor in 2015 of Texas taxpayer money just for border security. We shouldn't have to do that in Texas. And it's going to be billions more to our taxpayers. It's having a big impact in Texas. But these people crossing the border are coming to all 50 states. Every county sheriff is going to be a border sheriff. Crime everywhere, drugs everywhere, the cartel. And think about this, Dinesh. We talk a lot about our past and slavery and the sin of that, which it was. And we need to address that. And we have addressed that. And we need to continue to talk about that so we never repeat that. But the Biden administration is creating a new class of slaves because a lot of these kids are going into sex trafficking. A lot of the women are going into sex trafficking. And a lot of the young men that come in, they have a deal with the cartel. They send back 20-30% of their earnings. If they don't, their families can be harmed. So you have people coming here without education, without health care. I mean, what do you do, Dinesh, with a 15-year-old kid comes in? He's 3 or 4 years behind education levels in the United States and doesn't speak English. You can't put him in the fourth grade. So they come into school for 6 months a year. They drop out. They have no future. And so they fall on our social safety net system, or they go into a life of crime, but they're always sending money back to the cartels. The money's flowing back. They've been enslaved by the cartels coming to America. And the Biden administration doesn't seem to care about those women, children, or those young men who are coming here. Legal immigration, that's what Republicans want. That's the system we should have. And that needs to get done.
Wow. So you're saying they're just doing it for their own purposes. And I agree completely. Dan Patrick, thanks so much. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Dinesh.
You know, when someone asks you, how are you, do you really ever stop to think about that? I mean, remember just a few years ago when you had so much more energy, when you were more vibrant, back when you felt so much healthier than you do now. And you can't just blame aging for how poorly you feel. You got to get the right nutrition back into your body. That could be what you're missing. You should try Balance of Nature. Now, just knowing you're getting vital nutrients every day sourced from 31 fruits and veggies, that's going to make a huge difference in your life. 10 daily servings of fruits and veggies, all in 6 small capsules. They're absolutely no trouble, always fresh, nothing artificial, and ready to take. Join me and experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. Now, for a limited time, all new preferred customers get an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. You got to use discount code America. Now, the number to call is 800-246-8751, 800-246-8751, or go to balanceofnature.com, use discount code America. Debbie and I are doing this segment together because a friend of Debbie's who grew up in the Rio Grande Valley now lives in a very kind of chic area of Dallas that is Highland Park. And apparently a group called Dallas Justice Now, kind of a spin-off of Black Lives Matter, has been handing out flyers in Highland Park. Flyers kind of aimed at Democrats, aimed at liberals, and very illuminating what the flyers say. So Debbie's friend got one of them. She's not a Democrat, but she was, I think, mistaken for one. And Debbie's like, have you seen this? And I could hardly believe it. I'm just going to read a few lines and have Debbie sort of talk about this a little bit. We're writing to you because we understand you're white and live within the Highland Park Independent School District. It is also our understanding that you are a Democrat and supporter of Black Lives Matter. So this is Black Lives Matter addressing fellow Democrats, asking them to do what? We are asking you to pledge that your children will not apply or attend any Ivy League school or U.S. News and World Report top 50 school. If you don't have children under 18, we ask you to pledge to hold your white privileged friends, family, and neighbors with children to this standard. And then it says, having your children attend these schools takes away spaces from students of color who need the job opportunities, education, and influence that these schools provide. And then it goes on to say, you know, you wealthy whites, you've been putting Black Lives Matter hashtags and slogans. It's now time to sort of pay up. It's time to live up to your values and deny yourself and your children the opportunities that should now be turned over to persons of color. You know, honey, I have to say a little bit of me loves this because in some way, they're holding the left to its own standard. You know, you say you're a beneficiary of white privilege. Okay, give up your privilege. Why are you living in this beautiful house? Move out. So that's the, you know, this is obviously the opening salvo, but this is kind of what I said to a kid at Amherst years ago, calling him on his hypocrisy. In a sense, this is now becoming institutionalized on the left.
Yeah, this is really, really troubling. You know, we talked about this being, having like four types of entitlement people, right? And so this is just one of them. I said the first one, of course, is people that love welfare. And they, you know, they keep having kids because they know they're going to get more money from the government. And so they don't want to work. They rather get it from the government. Okay, that's the first
type. So hold on. So this would be the FDR entitlement scheme. The idea here is that the government owes me. I need to get certain benefits to which I'm entitled as a taxpayer. That's the most modest form of, you may say, extraction.
Theft. Well, I mean, it is
theft ratified to some degree by the democratic process. What's number two?
Yeah, so it's people that feel like stores and businesses owe them something, and they can just go in and take whatever they want. Look at all of these videos of thieves going into these stores, just taking, you know, having these backpacks and going in there and just loading up and walking out. The manager's like, hey, you know, the security and nothing.
There was a video of a Black Lives Matter spokesman saying, hey, listen, this looting, it's a form of reparations.
Exactly.
So in other words, don't crack down on it.
Right.
Let it be.
Right.
Because
so they're entitled.
They feel entitled.
They don't feel like they're robbing anything or anyone. It's their stuff. You know, let them take it, right? So that's the second.
Yep.
The third, of course, is this, the guilt trip and intimidation tactic that they use in order to have their way.
Okay, right? Now pause. You're talking about two different things. So guilt and intimidation, it's interesting how they go together. So guilt is the carrot. In other words, guilt appeals to your voluntary submission. Right. You recognize that what you're doing is wrong. You should feel guilty because of all the things you've done. You admit that you are a beneficiary of white privilege. So voluntarily relinquish what you have. But you're saying veiled behind that is, hey, if you don't, we can come loot your house.
Right. I believe that this letter that they had to sign either, yes, I agree, or I'm a racist.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So it's either or, right? And nobody wants to be called a racist or admit that they're something they're not. So
and anyone who thinks that they're not going to come and intimidate you at your home should remember the McCloskeys.
Exactly. That's exactly what they did to them, right? They went in there and they intimidated. And look at who is paying the price. Not them, but rather the McCloskeys, right? So they're the ones that had to give up their weapons and all of that.
So we have this escalating, you know, we have entitlements, we have looting,
right?
You know, where is this going? What's its end point?
Okay, the end point is taking your stuff, your possessions, by force. And this is what I call the Venezuelan model. But the Venezuelan model started with all these others, okay? It didn't just happen that way. It was a progression. And it got to that.
So let's talk about what happens in Venezuela. So in Venezuela today, we had you saying this in the movie Trump Card. You said if you leave your house and go on vacation, you come to America to visit a relative, you go back, your house might find someone else living there. In other words, the government has literally assigned someone else to move into your house.
To take your house, take your land, you name it. Not just that, but also Hugo Chavez went through this expropriation campaign where he expropriated businesses. And he would ask, who owns that? You know, he'd point to the business. And one of his staffers would say, a Jewish family, take it, expropriate it. And he'd just walk down the street and expropriate all the businesses. Because in his world, nobody owns anything except for the government.
And honestly, as you say all this, I mean, literally 10 years ago, people would have to say, wow, I mean, things are really horrible over there. But rest in the secure conviction that that can't happen in the United States. I think that phrase, that can't happen here, is increasingly being eroded by things we do see happening.
Right.
You know, the First Amendment. Free speech may be suppressed over there, but it's not going to happen over here. Well, it is happening over here.
In fact,
it's here.
It is here now. And you know, Hugo Chavez's tactics actually gave way to making criminals also feel entitled. As a matter of fact, now the government is cracking down on gangs. Criminal gangs that extort people, that, you know, they just go in and take things from your house, you know, just like the thieves here in America go into Walmart or Target and take things. These criminals go into people's houses and do the same thing. And why? Because that mentality basically started with Hugo Chavez doing it himself.
And
being okay with the criminals doing it as well.
Although at some point the socialist state, and this is maybe the final, this is almost stage five, where the socialist state doesn't want the competition of the gangs because the gangs are doing in a disorganized way what the socialist state arrogates to itself. We should have the right to take anybody's house. But not you randos out there doing it on your own behalf. So therefore, stop doing it. Let us do it because we're the official channel for robbing the citizens' blood.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So very eerie, very scary. And I think people need to just say, no.
Yeah, this direct escalation, I think, represents a kind of a clue to where the left is really headed. The complete disrespect of private space, private property, and earned benefits, which are now all ascribed to white privilege. And their point is, if you got it unfairly, if it's stolen goods, give it up, man. You really can't have too many towels. That's what we're discovering, Debbie and I. And we're just going crazy because Mike Lindell has this amazing special on his towels and we are taking full advantage of it. For a limited time, Mike Lindell is offering ridiculously good deal on his 6-piece towel set. Now, the set includes 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, and 2 washcloths. They're made with USA cotton. They're soft yet absorbent. They're fantastic. They're regularly $109.99. He's almost given them away. $39.99. That's a special. $39.99. Call 1-800-876-0227. Again, that number, 800-876-0227. Or go to MyPillow.com. Make sure to use promo code Dinesh. One of the wonderful benefits, blessings of reading history, but also reading literature, historical literature, is that it enables us to see the present in the light of the past, to understand the present more deeply, because we see parallels, sometimes in very different contexts or circumstances in the past. I want to talk for a moment about, for a little bit, about Shakespeare's Richard II, one of his great history plays. And my topic is Richard II and the Republican Party. Now, I'm going to outline very briefly the plot of Richard II, and I'm think you will begin to see the parallels even as I do that. So this play is about a great struggle between a legitimate king, Richard II, and a usurper, someone who wants to take his throne, one of the nobles, a guy named Bolingbroke, who ultimately is successful in dethroning, in overthrowing Richard, II, and becoming himself Henry IV. And then there are further plays by Shakespeare about Henry IV, part one, part two, and then, of course, Henry V, which is the son of Henry IV. So the usurpation continues to the next generation. Now, the main focus of the plot is on Richard's a sense that he is God's man for the job, the naturally ordained king, the divine right of kings. And Richard is constantly appealing to his divine right. And Bolingbroke, the usurper, is a kind of Machiavellian. He's cunning, he's a plotter, he's devious. He will appeal to divine right himself once he becomes king. But he's willing to use any strategy, any device that he can to gain power for himself. And once he has the power, he will then claim that it is sanctified by God. In other words, he doesn't think that divine power will come to his rescue. Richard does. Richard is constantly saying things like, you know, I'm calling upon armies of angels to deliver their swords against my tormentors. Richard is a talker. He's a poet. And he's a very eloquent poet. He is a man of words. He's constantly talking about the injustices that are being done to him. And he speaks in a kind of beautiful poetry. Here's a single line that kind of captures the rhetorical flourish of this eloquent king. Not all the water in the rough, rude sea can wash the balm from an anointed king. What's he saying? Yeah, the sea is rough, and I love that phrase, the sea is rude, because it doesn't respect human boundaries. But yet, for all its power, all the water in the ocean can't wash away the simple fact that I am God's man on the throne. I have divine right, and no human thing can wash that away. Now, this is very different, of course, from Bolingbroke's view. The usurper's view, which is that, yes, if I can get a coalition of the nobles, if I can actually appeal to some grievances, but the cunning move of Bolingbroke is to take these grievances and then use them as a wedge to overthrow Richard. And it was not just to get a redress for the grievances. Hey, listen, I want to have my confiscated land back. No, the idea is give me my confiscated land back and also give me your throne. So, As we summarize Richard versus Bolingbroke, I'd have to say this. Richard is a talker. Bolingbroke is a doer. Richard is decent but stupid. Bolingbroke is evil but cunning. Richard appeals to providence. Bolingbroke appeals to ruthless organization. Richard, whenever he makes an advance or wins a victory, he immediately relaxes because he thinks, oh, I've done it. Bolingbroke never rests. He's indefatigable. He's constantly at it. Politics is a full-time business for him. Richard has scruples. He won't do this. He won't do that. This is unseemly for a king. Bolingbroke is unscrupulous. He will stop at nothing. And finally, Richard plays by, well, this is a modern term, but the Marquis of Queensberry rules. It would be wrong to do that. That's against the rules. I mean, I'm thinking here of, you know, people like Romney. That's against the rules. The Marquis of Queensberry would not do it that way. Bolingbroke is full-on Machiavelli. There are no rules. Or to put it differently, you get to make the rules and you devise the rules in such a way that your opponents are discouraged and constantly disadvantaged. The throne remains yours in, you may say, perpetuity. So don't you see here in laying out these rival characters, the psychological characteristics of the two major parties? Here's the Republican Party. It's almost a definition of Richard. Decent but stupid. A party of talkers. Oh, this has been wronged in this way. Look at the double standards over there. Appeals to inaction. Let's just wait. Things will work out. Relax after a victory. Win the election. There's nothing more to do till the next election. Then we can kind of get whipped up into a frenzy again. Scruples. Yes, the other side did that. They used the deep state against us, but we can't use the deep state against them. They're packing the court, but we'd never dream of packing the court. And so ultimately what happens is that the decent side ties its own hands while the bad guy has the freedom to roam uninhibited. And then at the end, guess who ends up with the throne?
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.